bird note. Here they come. Rufous hummingbirds, ruby throats, and others are migrating north after a hot, dry winter in sunny Mexico or Central America. And they're ready for a drink.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Earlier this afternoon, Donald Trump was arraigned on a New York Supreme Court indictment, returned by a Manhattan grand jury on 34 felony counts of falsifying business records in the first degree.
34 felonies. That's what Donald Trump is facing after being arraigned in a New York courtroom, becoming the first U.S. president ever to be criminally charged. We'll speak to a longtime criminal defense attorney, as well as former presidential candidate Ralph Nader. Then we look at two major victories for progressives Tuesday. Brandon Johnson has won the Chicago mayoral race, and a Democratic-backed judge has won a highly contested race for a seat on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, giving progressives control of the court for the first time in 15 years.
Wisconsin voters have made their voices heard. Yeah. They've chosen to reject partisan extremism in this state.
And we go to Tennessee, where Republicans are trying to expel three Democratic lawmakers for supporting student-led gun control protests at the state capitol after last week's mass school shooting in Nashville. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Earlier this afternoon, Donald Trump was arraigned on a New York Supreme Court indictment, returned by a Manhattan grand jury on 34 felony counts of falsifying business records in the first degree.
34 felonies. That's what Donald Trump is facing after being arraigned in a New York courtroom, becoming the first U.S. president ever to be criminally charged. We'll speak to a longtime criminal defense attorney, as well as former presidential candidate Ralph Nader. Then we look at two major victories for progressives Tuesday. Brandon Johnson has won the Chicago mayoral race, and a Democratic-backed judge has won a highly contested race for a seat on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, giving progressives control of the court for the first time in 15 years.
Wisconsin voters have made their voices heard. Yeah. They've chosen to reject partisan extremism in this state.
And we go to Tennessee, where Republicans are trying to expel three Democratic lawmakers for supporting student-led gun control protests at the state capitol after last week's mass school shooting in Nashville.
Three of us lawmakers who stood with our constituents demanding that they take action and hear that thousands of people gathered on Thursday talking about the crisis of mass shootings. We've been kicked off our committees as representatives elected by our constituents. Each of us represents 78,000 people, and our people are being silenced.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Former President Donald Trump pleaded not guilty to 34 felony counts of falsifying business records to cover up hush money payments made to adult film star Stormy Daniels, Playboy model Karen McDougal, and a former Trump Tower doorman during his 2016 presidential campaign. Trump's the first U.S. president to be criminally charged, also the first president to be impeached twice. Trump was fingerprinted after his arrest Tuesday, but did not have his mugshot taken and was not handcuffed. After his arraignment in New York, Trump flew back to his Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida, where he railed against his prosecution to his supporters and the media.
Our elections were like those of a third world country. And now this massive election interference at a scale never seen before in our country, beginning with the radical left, George Soros-backed prosecutor Alvin Bragg of New York, who campaigned on the fact that he would get President Trump. I got to get him. I'm going to get him. This is a guy campaigning.
Trump also attacked the judge, Judge Juan Merchan, Merchan's wife and his daughter. In Chicago, Brandon Johnson was elected mayor in a major victory for progressives. Johnson, a black teachers union organizer, defeated conservative Democrat Paul Vallis, a champion of charter schools who ran on a law and order platform despite massive amounts of money being poured into the Vallis campaign. Johnson spoke last night after his victory was announced, calling Chicago a union town and vowing to support working people.
The truth is, the people have always worked for Chicago. Whether you wake up early to open the doors of your businesses, or teach middle school, or wear a badge to protect our streets, or nurse patients in need, or provide childcare services, you have always worked for this city. And now Chicago will begin to work for its people, all the people.
In another election in Wisconsin, progressive judge Janet Prusiewicz won the special election for the state Supreme Court, flipping Wisconsin's highest court after 15 years of a conservative majority. Prusiewicz's victory gives the court the votes it needs to restore abortion rights, which were taken away after Roe v. Wade was overturned last summer, challenge the state's highly gerrymandered legislative maps, and prevent potential anti-democratic maneuvers in 2024 in the crucial swing state. Prusiewicz addressed her supporters last night after her win was called.
Our state is taking a step forward to a better and brighter future where our rights and freedoms will be protected. Yeah. And while there is still work to be done, tonight we celebrate this historic victory that has obviously reignited hope in so many of us.
In international news, Israeli police raided the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in occupied East Jerusalem late Tuesday, attacking Palestinian worshippers during Ramadan.
The Israeli police attacked us inside there. All of the young people inside are suffering, and no one is helping them. What are you waiting for? They attacked everyone inside. The windows of the mosque are all broken.
Witnesses say police used stun grenades and tear gas and beat worshippers with batons and rifles. At least a dozen people were injured. 400 Palestinians were arrested. Al-Aqsa's medical clinic was destroyed. Meanwhile, on Monday, Israeli forces killed two more Palestinians in a military raid in the city of Nablus in the occupied West Bank, bringing the total number of Palestinians killed by Israel this year to at least 94. Over 400 human rights defenders from across the globe were killed last year, with Colombia accounting for nearly half the cases, making it the deadliest country for rights activists in the world. That's according to a new report by the international group Frontline Defenders, which said the killings of human rights activists skyrocketed in 2022. Ukraine also topped the list, followed by Mexico, Brazil, and Honduras. In Bangladesh, around 3,000 shops at a popular clothing market in the capital, Dhaka, were destroyed Tuesday during a massive fire that took over 6 hours to contain. Hundreds of firefighters and soldiers were deployed to battle the blaze as a tour through stores, turning them into piles of ashes. Shopkeepers say they may not be able to recover from the financial loss. In Pakistan, at least 13 women and children were crushed to death Friday outside a factory in Karachi that was distributing food donations and cash for the month of Ramadan. Victims were stampeded as hundreds of people rushed the collection site. 8 people, including the factory manager, have been arrested, accused of failing to put safety protocols in place. The tragedy comes as Pakistan is facing a worsening economic crisis, skyrocketing inflation, with many families unable to afford enough food. This is a grieving father who's 7-year-old child was killed in the crush.
There were no rules or regulations as my son got trampled there. I am totally devastated. There are other people like me whose children were killed, martyred. The women who had nothing to eat went there. Can't the government see that people are dying of hunger?
The International Court of Justice ruled the U.S. illegally froze the assets of Iranian companies and ordered the U.S. to pay compensation. But the ICJ also said it did not have jurisdiction over the $1.75 billion from Iran's central bank that's being held at Citibank in New York. Both Tehran and Washington claim victory in the rulings from the International Court of Justice, also known as the World Court. The U.S. froze the assets to serve as compensation for victims of a 1983 bombing in Lebanon and other attacks it says were linked to Iran. Though ICJ rulings are binding, there's no mechanism for enforcing them. A judge in Alaska dealt a blow to environmental indigenous activists, ruling ConocoPhillips can move ahead with construction on the $8 billion Willow drilling project, which the Biden administration approved last month. The groups that sought to halt the construction vowed to continue their legal fight. A Johnson & Johnson subsidiary has filed for bankruptcy a second time and upped their settlement offer from $2 billion to $8.9 billion in response to tens of thousands of lawsuits by customers who say its talc products caused their cancer. This comes after an appeals court in January rejected an earlier attempt by Johnson & Johnson to offload its lawsuits onto a spinoff company and file that entity for bankruptcy. J&J heavily marketed its baby powder to African American women for years with the knowledge its talc products contained asbestos. And here in New York, Governor Kathy Hochul extended the state's overdue budget by 1 week to April 10th as negotiations with lawmakers continue. In recent weeks, housing activists have ramped up calls to include a provision for good cause evictions in New York State's budget, which would protect tenants from massive rent hikes and being kicked out of their homes. Activists staged protests at the state capitol last week, leading to dozens of arrests. National data show evictions increased by more than 50% last year. Meanwhile, climate activists say Governor Hochul is trying to gut New York's law aimed at reducing fossil fuel emissions by including a proposal in the budget that allows for more emissions disguised as a cost-saving measure for customers. The move downplays the effects of methane emissions by viewing its damage over a longer period of time. The Lever is reporting Hochul received donations of nearly $500,000 in the last election cycle from CEOs of energy companies that would benefit from the change, including Hess Corporation and United Metro Energy. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Well, Juan, in a moment, we're going to go back to you in Chicago to talk about this historic mayoral victory for Brandon Johnson. But first, we're going to be here in New York with this latest news. Donald Trump has been formally charged with 34 felonies in an indictment unsealed Tuesday. After surrendering to authorities at a New York courthouse, Trump was placed under arrest and fingerprinted. He then appeared in a courtroom where he pled not guilty to all 34 counts of falsifying business records in connection with hush money payments he paid out during the 2016 presidential campaign. Trump is the first U.S. president ever to be charged with a crime, also the first U.S. president to be impeached twice. This all comes as Trump is running for president again while he's facing several other major criminal investigations. Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg spoke to the news at a news conference after the hearing and outlined the charges against Trump.
Earlier this afternoon, Donald Trump was arraigned on a New York Supreme Court indictment, returned by a Manhattan grand jury, on 34 felony counts of falsifying business records in the first degree. Under New York State law, it is a felony to falsify business records with intent to defraud and intent to conceal another crime. That is exactly what this case is about. 34 false statements made to cover up other crimes. These are felony crimes in New York State. No matter who you are, we cannot and will not normalize serious criminal conduct.
Donald Trump flew back to Florida after his arraignment and gave a speech at night in Mar-a-Lago, where he repeatedly attacked the judge in the case, the judge's wife and the judge's daughter, as well as DA Alvin Bragg and his wife and other prosecutors investigating him.
And I never thought anything like this could happen in America. Never thought it could happen. The only crime that I have committed is to fearlessly defend our nation from those who seek to destroy it.
To talk more about the charges against Donald Trump, we're joined by Bobbi Sternheim. She is a criminal defense lawyer who's tried several high-profile cases. She was the lead defense attorney for Ghislaine Maxwell. We're also joined by Ralph Nader, and we're going to talk to him in a moment. But Bobbi Sternheim, if you can talk about this unsealed indictment, 34 felonies against an ex-president. This is historic. Talk about how significant you think these charges are.
Well, I think the charges in and of themselves are significant. And what makes it especially interesting is that each of the 34 counts is grounded in a piece of evidence, whether an invoice or a check or an entry in a ledger. So none of these charges stand alone, requiring just the testimony of a witness. The documents, the ledgers, the checks speak for themselves, and they can't be cross-examined.
And what about this? What about the issue of these, what were essentially considered misdemeanors, being possibly raised to felonies, and the debate over whether a conviction can be gotten on some of these counts?
Well, certainly it doesn't seem like a slam dunk because it involves a legal theory that will have to be developed at a trial. Although the indictment itself is pretty silent on the underlying facts, other than the documentary evidence, the statement of facts that accompanied it really speak loudly. And they enhance the indictment, almost turning it into a speaking indictment. The linkage of the checks, the invoices, the ledger, all show that something was done. And what stands behind all of this is Donald Trump's efforts with other individuals to help him succeed in the presidential election. And what's interesting about it, it shows behavior that occurred during his candidacy and behavior that occurred after he was sworn in and became president. So it almost is a prequel for things that will come in other jurisdictions. But yes, it may seem unique to some, but these kinds of crimes are prosecuted every day. And it is not an uncommon indictment, as one might see in federal court.
Now, the judge also warned Trump that if he acts out or disrupts proceedings, the court will proceed without him. This isn't common, especially at an arraignment situation, is it?
Well, it is not uncommon for a judge to tell an individual that the proceedings will go on even if you don't show up for your trial. And those are warnings that are often given. It is not typically given in a business fraud case. And what even layered this admonition, which are called Parker warnings, was the fact that the judge even indicated that if the defendant, in this case Donald Trump, were to act out or be disruptive in court, he could be removed and the proceedings would go on without his presence. So that was somewhat unusual, but it does dovetail with the other issues that were raised during the arraignment, which have to do with remarks that Donald Trump has made and continues to make even after the arraignment on his indictment.
And Bobbi Sternheim, following up on that point, you have a speech last night at Mar-a-Lago. The judge warned him about inciting violence. He attacked the judge. He attacked the judge's wife, the judge's daughter, the DA, the DA's wife. Already on the Manhattan DA's website, they have taken off the identification of all the people that work there because of the death threats against the Manhattan DA. What about the significance of this?
Well, what is very significant, looking at it in a frame of a typical defendant who would be before the court where a court would decide whether bail should be granted. Two of the major factors that a court would consider would be whether an individual will flee the jurisdiction and be present in court. And the second is whether the individual would be a danger to the community. In this case, the statements that Donald Trump made before he entered the courtroom and made right after he exited the courtroom and returned to Florida certainly show an indication of a danger to the community, a danger to the lives of certain individuals, and an overall disrespect for the court. Now, the court could have been more bold in an admonition to Donald Trump, but it somewhat soft-pedaled it. But now the ammunition has been launched by Donald Trump for the prosecutors to ask the court to put into place maybe not a gag order, but certainly rules and regulations that would be deemed in violation of court order if Donald Trump continues to lash out to individuals personally and cause any form of civil unrest.
Bobby Stern, I want to thank you for being with us. Criminal defense lawyers tried several high-profile federal cases, former president of the New York Women's Bar Association. This is Democracy Now! As we cover this historic arraignment of former President Donald Trump, we look at what he has not been charged with, well, at least yet. We're joined on the phone by Ralph Nader, longtime consumer advocate, corporate critic, former presidential candidate many times. Welcome back to Democracy Now!, Ralph. Your response to what took place yesterday, it was historic, first ever ex or sitting president charged, criminally charged. He's charged with 34 felonies, and he also has been impeached twice. But talk about what he did get charged with and what he didn't.
Well, it was historic in the sense it was massively overdue. Let's start with Donald Trump's notorious statement in 2019, which lays the basis for his lawlessness day after day as president. He said, quote, "With Article 2, I can do whatever I want as president." End quote. Really? But he went on to prove it before 2019 when he made the statement and after. And so the broader frame of reference here is that he turned the White House into a daily crime scene. John Bolton, who was his special assistant, in his memoir said obstruction of justice in the White House was a way of life. That's a serious crime. In the Mueller report, they outlined 10 major obstruction of justice against law enforcement in a very crude manner. There wasn't any subtlety about it. But what Trump has done openly, brazenly, there's nothing furtive like Nixon about Trump, is that in the White House, he set a historic record for defying over 150 congressional subpoenas. That's criminal contempt. He got away with it. He shoveled around billions of dollars from one program to another, most notoriously from military housing projects to extend the wall on the Mexican border. That is a violation of a criminal law called the Anti-Deficiency Act. He got away with it. He used the White House as a political reelection base, had events there openly, right on the White House lawn, and forced the Treasury Department to put his name on millions of checks going out during the pandemic to millions of Americans. That is a crime. It violates the criminal prohibition in the Hatch Act from using the power of the federal government against your electoral opponents. He got away with it. It's important to say also that all presidents violate laws. He's just taking it to a new and diverse height. But he's doing it so brazenly that if he gets away with it, he will continue to contribute to the institutionalization of lawlessness by presidents of the United States. Let's face it, both Bush, Obama, and Trump violated all kinds of laws in extending the empire. Obama, for example, decreed informally that he could pick out anybody in the world, and as prosecutor, judge, jury, executioner, and in secret, wiped that person out, and he did it. Of course, Bush was the big war criminal with Cheney invading Iraq. But then Obama took out the regime in Libya without a congressional debate, without a congressional authorization, appropriation of funds, or declaration of war. And that's, to this day, producing chaos and violence, goaded by Secretary of State Clinton, who pushed Obama to do this, and he later admitted it was his biggest mistake of his administration. So we have all kinds of other tax violations, obstruction of voting, campaign finance violations, never mind his assault and battery of women, which he seemed to be proud of. So this event yesterday represents the first turnaround. Why did the Democrats wait so long? They had 12 impeachable offenses in 2019. We got them in the congressional record, December 19th. Congressman John Larson put them in. Nancy Pelosi just went with the Ukraine matter, not exactly a kitchen table issue affecting millions of Americans. They had much better issues. So you had one party letting the other party get away with it, in part because the Democrats also violated laws at the presidential level. So I think the American people have got to see this as a opportunity, a gateway to reverse the process where presidents are above the law. They have been above the law. People around the world have suffered and died because these presidents have been above the law. So we have to broaden it out, because what the GOP is going to try to do is focus on yesterday and Alvin Bragg's prosecution. When the criminal lawlessness
Ralph, Trump, I wanted to ask you about Trump's Ralph, I wanted to ask you about Trump's attacks on the IRS, and especially since probably his most consistent historical violations have been in evading his own the taxes, his personal taxes, and those of his companies. Could you talk about that?
Well, yes. David K. Johnson's written about this. He was on your program yesterday. He's been under regular audit year after year by the IRS. There never seems to be any resolution. It turned out that the IRS was so strapped in its budget, it just had one auditor on this massive commercial sprawling empire of Trump, using every possible tax evasion, tax avoidance system imaginable. So he really has gotten away with that. But worse, apropos your question, is he worked with the Republicans year after year in starving the IRS budget so that it couldn't have the skilled auditors to go after the tax evasion of the super rich and the multinational corporations. In fact, one study out of Berkeley pointed out that over 20% of the top super-rich Americans in the United States were evading billions and billions of dollars of taxes, and the IRS was handcuffed. And to this day, the IRS is under pressure by the Republicans, going after their budget. Fortunately, they don't control the Senate, so they can't get it through. But clearly, the Trump and the Republican Party were actively and purposely engaged in aiding and abetting tax evasion by the super rich and corporations, all kinds of money that could have gone to good works in our country.
And we only have a minute to go, Ralph. But if you can talk about